This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall on ABC Radio.
Well, teachers are leaving the profession at an alarming rate, and some say we will face a huge teacher shortage in the next few years.
And there's lots of reasons for that, Rochelle. Casualisation, short-term contracts, low pay, lack of respect, and just huge workloads. Not to mention the pressure that COVID is putting on teachers. They're some of the key factors driving them away.
In New South Wales, the Teacher Federation says that its state alone will need 11,000 new teachers in the next 10 years. So what's the outlook for Victoria?
Well, we're going to hear from the Australian Education Union this morning, and I think they're saying they need about 1,300 teachers a year, and that's just to keep up with demand. That's not dealing with the attrition of people walking away from teaching. Just to keep up with demand.
Absolutely. And it feels like no matter what story or topic we cover on this program or throughout many programs on ABC local radio, when something big has to be addressed, how often do you hear, well, they should teach it in school? Now, that's everything, you know, from consent through to mental health, all that big stuff in life. Time and time again, that pressure, it feels like, is falling back on teachers, John.
Yeah, I do feel sorry for teachers too, because sometimes when parents feel that they have to have an uncomfortable conversation with their kids, they, well, why didn't they get taught this in school? And I feel like sometimes we are too unrealistic about the pressure we put on teachers to have everything in the curriculum. It's only so big, Rish.
That's right. So maybe that's a part of it as well, that you no longer just have to teach the curriculum, but you have to teach all of those life skills as well. So are you a teacher, and are you walking away from the profession, and why? And more importantly, what would keep you teaching?
On ABC Radio, this is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall.
And we're just talking about casualisation. Well, Sally Butler is a casual teacher from Melbourne and with us now. Morning, Sally.
Good morning, everyone. How are you?
Very well. So are you surprised that teachers are walking away?
I'm not surprised that teachers are walking away, because I think through COVID, it's meant that people are re-looking at their lives and if this is their dream life too. And I think, as you were talking about before, there is a lot more other things involved other than the classroom. There's social skills and emotional skills, and that's being put onto teachers as well. And I do think people are re-looking at what's the most important about for them in their teaching world and life. Is teaching for them, or are they taking a totally different direction too? So, yes.
Sally, when I was growing up, it was pretty rare to have a substitute teacher. And if you did, it was, you know, the excitement of the day, and it just very rarely happened. But through some of the research that I was going through over the weekend, the casualisation of teachers is quite prolific, and that could be 2-week contracts or 12-month contracts, but never really any permanent work. And you lose all of those benefits that come alongside with a permanent position. How commonplace is it?
I do think it's becoming more of a commonplace, because lots more schools are looking at the bottom line too. So they're looking at what they what's important to them, and if they can get a teacher in for 2 weeks to cover a role, or for 12 months, that's it, because then they don't need to pay the holiday pay over the Christmas time. So I do think it's becoming more prevalent in schools. It just depends what sector of the community you are, if you're in local, if you're in private or other independent sectors, or if you're in the state government sector. It all depends on what's happening at the school at the time and what their requirements are. But yes, it is more common, way more common now.
Hey, Sally, we've got a text here saying teaching is totally undervalued. Neoliberal education systems care not for their contribution to how education can evolve and develop. But do you feel underappreciated?
I don't feel underappreciated where I work. I think my expertise and the variety of work that I can do in schools are appreciated. and I'm well known for that in Melbourne where I teach, but I do understand that other teachers feel underappreciated with the expectations of the community of the school as well as outsiders too.
How do we change this? How is it? Because we hear so many different reports from teachers feeling underappreciated, not only from other teachers, principals, but parents and the terrible way some parents can treat teachers, kids, the expectation of what's put onto you, of what you have to teach. And then you add to that that you don't have any security in your work. I don't know how many people will be throwing up their hands to say, that sounds great. I'll take it. Thank you very much. How do we fix some of these issues?
Well, there is some schools that have realised that they do need to fix it, and they're putting in they're rebuilding programs in place and putting wellbeing programs in place in schools and bringing in experts too to make sure that the staff are not also looked out after outside the classroom and that their wellbeing is put in place, and they bring in experts like Pekin Crone, who's worked with athletes around the world, to make sure that the teachers have more of a balance. It's not just about the teaching, it's about other aspects to their lives as well. That's a really important way forward. And also to give teachers the opportunity to debrief about what's been going on in their classrooms as staffing, and that if there needs to be more support in classroom settings, that it's been put in place so that everyone sees that they're valued and they're respected for their work.
Sally, just before we let you go, how are you going with teaching remotely? I mean, or are you doing that at the moment?
At the moment, I'm lucky because I'm trained from ELC up to year 12. There's been opportunities to work into ELC environments, which are kinder placements, settings. So at the moment, I'm in a kindergarten for the last couple of days. So hopefully that keeps continuing on. But if not, there's no guarantee of work in lockdowns. So that is it's not a fabulous moment when a lockdown happens, because we're not guaranteed any work whatsoever. And that does need to change, and hopefully that does happen in the future for casual leave teachers or short-term contract people.
Sally, thanks so much for your time. Best of luck.
Thank you.
Sally Butler, casual teacher from Melbourne. This text: I'm a teacher, I don't want to walk away, but having said that, I've really struggled to return to work after taking time off to have children. I've now been doing casual work for around 5 years. I really want more reliable work, but it's almost impossible to find. And another text, Jono, that says, my wife says the problem is because I don't teach civics in school anymore, and it's just so important to help you value what's important in society.
And that kind of echoes what Sally was saying there, that she has tried to get a long-term contract and has been trying for years but just can't kind of secure one. Elizabeth is in Reservoir. Morning, Elizabeth. What's your experience?
Good morning. So I was a teacher in a primary school. I was secondary trained, but I worked as a performing and visual arts teacher, and I loved it. So, you know, I really enjoyed my work. I loved the kids and their excitement about new learning. But the workload just grew and grew and grew. So every year they'd take away another little bit of support, so that by the end of the time when I did finally decide to leave, I just felt overwhelmed and it was impossible to get everything done. And the expectations of things that we used to do as volunteers became stuff that we had to do as part of our job description. And so it just got larger and larger.
There's a text here, Elizabeth, that says teacher burnout is real. Do you agree?
I've spoken to so many teachers who come on a call with me. So I now work as a career transition coach for educators to help them find new pathways. And I talk to people who are broken, who are just unable to get off the couch. They're crying. They can't see any hope for the future. But they still get up and go to work the next day because they're worried about their financial position. And a lot of women particularly have been out of the workforce for a long time, so they don't have a lot of super. Like someone who texted in before, out on maternity leave, they come back, it's hard to find a permanent position, and they may have already lost, you know, some long service leave because they've been out of the workforce. They don't have the backup, and then if something goes wrong, their partner gets sick, or if they get sick, they're suddenly in a really difficult financial position where they feel like they can't leave, even if they want to.
Elizabeth, were you mentored, or are there kind of mentor relationships in schools? Because I know, particularly for young teachers, I reckon that could be part of the solution to keep young teachers in the role, is having really strong mentors.
Yeah, great question. So when I started, I was 42, so I came quite late. We already had our family, and you know, I had my young kids in sort of primary school and early high school when I began teaching. And I did have a mentor as a graduate. So I was out of the classroom one period a week where I got to sit with them, and, you know, they helped me get my portfolio ready so that I was, you know, able to be registered as a teacher. But what I didn't have, and I think I would have really valued, was like a career mentor. So someone to help me manage the trajectory of the career, so that I knew maybe to take a career break after 4 years. So I know I've talked to teachers in the US that do this, where they'll call it, they've got 4 over 5, so they work for 4 years and they take the 5th year off and then they go back again. And I think that's a really nice way to manage the workload and the energy levels so that you can keep going. It's like being on stage every day. You stand up in front of your classroom and you put out everything you've got, and then you know, and then you've got to go to a meeting or a, you know, get on a phone call with a parent or something, and it just drains everything out of you. But, you know, or the teachers that are doing an amazing job, that seems to be what's happening. They're the ones that I'm talking to who come to me and say, please, can you help me? I just can't sustain this any longer. Gosh. But I think the, you know, my daughter, one of my daughters has adopted some greyhounds, and they have this whole career planned out for them where they race for a while and then they, you know, they get adopted by someone and they're looked after in their, you know.
You're learning what we can learn from greyhounds to teachers. It's crude, but maybe it's true. It's been really interesting to get your insights. Elizabeth, thank you. Some text, Jono, saying, so great to actually hear this conversation. I retired last year, not COVID related, but stress and burnout. Way too much placed on the profession, particularly in the last 10 years. Accountability, preparation, record keeping, major data driven, has replaced the time teachers teach in the classrooms. Principals who lead by bullying staff and forcing them out of the system. And so many people sending in text saying, I've been on sort of rolling short-term contracts, some for up to 10 or 12 years.
Yeah, and that's not going to be good for anyone, really, is it? And it's not a good advertisement for the job. But it was really interesting to hear Elizabeth there speaking about being on stage every day. I think what a lot of people don't necessarily understand is that it's not just the act of teaching, of being on stage every day. It's all of the work that goes into class plans and preparation and marking and exams and professional development, staff meetings, teacher meetings, student, parent, teacher interviews. There's just a lot to it that people don't see. They think, oh, 13 weeks annual leave a year, beauty, let's get into it. But it's not that easy.
Lisa Wilson is from Durringill Primary School, which is a tiny little school just outside Ballarat. When I say tiny, I think, Lisa, you've got 10 students, is that correct?
Sorry, can you say that again, please? I missed that little bit.
How many students do you have at your entire school?
Two.
Wow.
Lisa, what's happening with teachers where you are when it comes to small schools? Are you struggling to find teachers?
Permanent teachers at my school, no. I'm in an ongoing capacity and I have a part-time teacher who is also ongoing, so we've both been here for a while. But I know a lot of small schools around us where the staff have moved on or the staff have retired who really have struggled to find new staff. Where we're struggling is to find our casual relief teachers. So the teachers who come in for 1 day or 1 week, something like that, because I've got a meeting or because we're off sick, something to that regard. And that's where we struggle.
Yeah. And I can understand that. But with two students, I mean, your workload must be a little bit less than other teachers, right?
Not necessarily. While we might only have two students, I'm what's called a teaching principal. So I actually teach in the classroom as well as having the principal role. But I still have to do a lot of the same paperwork in the same capacity as if I had 1,000 students in my school.
The incentive of $20,000 for teachers to move to regional and rural Victoria to teach and to take up positions maybe that aren't as desirable as some others. Has that been something that's potentially helped you, Lisa, get teachers?
That only works when you're putting people into an ongoing capacity. That's not for casual relief teachers. So we haven't had to use that, but I know of other schools around who have, and they've still struggled to get people to move to the country. And like, we're not isolated here. We're about 40 minutes out of Shepparton, so we're not, you know, Cairn River or in the middle of the Mallee or somewhere where you really are isolated. But, yeah, there are schools around who've struggled, even though they've had that incentive.
I know there a couple of years ago there was a program brought in called Teach for Australia, and the whole idea was attracting teachers to regional areas, particularly from, you know, areas of their work that might be required, so mathematicians, scientists, or whatever it might be. Have you had any Teach for Australia people come through, or is that part of the solution?
Personally, I haven't had anything to do with that program at all, so I can't comment on it, but it could be part of the solution for us. However, a lot of those people that you're talking about would probably go into the secondary sector rather than the primary sector because they're a specialised person.
And just finally, Lisa, do you worry about your school remaining open when you only have two students?
Yes, we are fighting currently to remain open. Schools don't get closed by the government anymore. That was something that happened in the 1990s under the Cannock government. And I certainly in those years had to fight. And the little school I was in at that stage, we fought and we kept. And it's still, it's an amalgamated school now, but that school is still running. So we are fighting. It is a community thing now. If the community wants to stay open, in theory, the school will stay. But we've got to, you know, be seen to be viable, and we've got to put our name out there and get people to take notice of us.
Yeah, best of luck with it. Thank you, Lisa. Lisa Wilson from Durrangile Primary School near Shepparton there.
Gosh, I hope those two students get along, Jono. Didn't like each other.
That's a good point.
Slightly
a good point.
Uncomfortable on the playground.
Sam is in Geelong. Morning, Sam. What do you want to say?
Hello. Yes, I was in teaching for nearly 10 years, a little bit like Elizabeth, started later in life and just loved it right from the very start. But after coming up for a decade, I was absolutely shattered by the experience of being in the classroom every day. I think people really underestimate the energy that's required to engage with 25 students every period and you know, keep in touch with them. So I retired and started a tutoring business, and now I get to indulge my passion at considerably less income, but I can still do what I think I do best without all the stresses of the school environment.
It used to be a profession that people loved, wanted to get into. It was highly respected. It was seen as a secure gig. How do we get it back to having those kind of titles attached to it, do you think, Sam?
Well, I think most teachers would still say that they love teaching. I really believe that. It's not a job that's for people who want to just treat it as a 9-to-5. I mean, a lot of people have to do that. That's their financial obligation. But an ability to relate to students and, you know, in a way that engages them and leads to learning is a real skill and also a sort of a talent or a vocation. So I don't think that should ever be undervalued, just like, you know, when you go and see a good GP, you know.
Yeah, that's it, Sam. Thank you. That's a really good point, actually. We should be valuing teachers along the same lines as medical professionals. They do a really, really important role.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of discussion around whether or not teachers are frontline workers when it comes to who gets vaccinated first. And I know that would have been a huge sticking point for a lot of people when it comes to the importance that we play on certain professions. This text, coaching programming in government schools is insulting. Unless you're a coach who gets paid a fortune, they get time release for observations, but I'm yet to meet one in my own planning time. How many years do I have to get coached for? Just wait till the next buzz department comes around. Meredith Pearce is the president of the Australian Education Union. We don't have a lot of time with you, Meredith, because we know that the daily press conference is coming up. But are you surprised by any of the comments, and are we going to face a teachers' shortage in Victoria in the next few years?
I'm not surprised by any of those comments. You've covered a huge range of issues, and they're all very pertinent to what our profession deals with on a day-to-day basis. We do already have shortages in some areas. It's particularly particularly focused on rural and regional areas, but also in those specialist areas, things like math, science, and that's more so in our secondary schools than in our primary schools, where we have, of course, more specialist teachers. So, you know, there is a very real risk that if we're not able to attract a new generation of teachers into our schools, then we will face significant shortages in the future. And you've touched on a whole variety of issues around valuing the profession. Workload is a significant problem driving people out of the profession. So, you know, we've got some significant challenges to deal with.
We seem to be failing teachers at multiple levels. So I'm just looking at a few stats here. This is from the Australian Bureau of Statistics from 2017, showing that 53% of people, so more than half of people who have a teaching degree, do not currently work in education. And research from the Australian government back in 2014 estimates that about 20% of people who graduate with a teaching ticket do not register as teachers on graduating. They get cold feet and they don't want to do it. Why is that?
Certainly the work that we've done with our members indicates that workload is a massive problem. It's one of the issues when people come into the profession that drives them out, and people don't see a long-term career in teaching. So we lose people in the early parts of their careers because of those workload issues. Security of employment, which you've also touched on, is another factor which really prevents people from either entering the profession or staying long term.
And salaries is another one. Are less people studying, Meredith? Are you seeing less people preparing to enter the profession?
No, I think the numbers have been reasonably stable in terms of people going through teacher education. But we've got about a million students in Victorian schools. We need to have a strong workforce for the future. We know we've got a lot of people reaching retirement age, and they need to be replaced. We need to see people valued, and we need to address the significant workload problems we have in our schools.
How much of this is about the teaching standards, the professional teaching standards that came in 2011, which kind of mean that teachers spend a lot of time justifying their existence, talking about what they've done and why they've done it, instead of actually teaching and planning for teaching?
Look, I think, you know, we would always say that professional standards are very important, and they, you know, they show a value for the profession. And the high standards that we meet in teaching our young people in our community. But what we have seen happen over a long period of time is that there's been increasing levels of what you might call accountability. One of your callers rang in before and talked about the vast array of things they do, which are not about the work they do directly with their students in the classroom on a daily basis. There's a huge amount of administration, compliance, record keeping, looking at collecting and looking at data, which takes people away from their core work of teaching and learning. And that's the most important part for our kids. You know, we know that if our kids don't get that support, then it can affect their lives for the rest of their lives.
This is really important stuff. Meredith, thank you for having a chat with us. Meredith Peace, President of the Australian Education Union, the Victorian branch of, anyway. Let's have a chat now with Michael, who's in Geelong. He's been to Finland and reckons teachers are treated better over there. I was talking before about the status of teachers earlier, Michael, and how maybe we need to start looking at them on the same status as, you know, doctors and lawyers. What do you reckon?
Oh, look, that's exactly the case. Over in Finland, teachers are trusted professionals. There's none of this. Most of all that workload stuff that you were just talking about is all about teachers being, you know, trying to make teachers accountable. In Finland, they're just trusted. They're professionals. Their opinion is important, and they're not treated as if they've got to continually justify everything they do. And so much of that workload stuff we're talking about, everything from NAP plan and so on, is all about teachers not being trusted. NAPLAN says we don't trust.
I think we trust teachers so much that we are handballing them most of our life skills teaching that we need. You know, teachers are now responsible for everything from consent to mental health to learning how to drive safe to managing your money. I feel like we trust them so much that we actually are asking them to do too much. Is it about respect? I'm not sure.
Well, the respect thing comes into it, but what you're talking about is the responsibilities that they have in the classroom, but outside of the classroom, there's lots and lots of paperwork and accountability things that they're constantly doing that are essentially trying to keep an eye on them to make sure that they're doing the right thing because they're not being trusted. I mean, that plan in itself tells the world we can't trust the assessment that teachers are doing, so we have to bring in this huge program to do it ourselves just to make sure that the teachers are doing the right thing.
Mm. Yeah, good on you. Really great to get your point. Thank you so much.
On ABC Radio, this is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall.
And we have been talking this morning about why teachers are leaving the job in droves and what we can do about that, what we can do to stop teachers leaving. If you are a teacher, why are you walking away from the profession? If you are, let us know. I've just got a text here saying, I haven't been able to follow closely what you're talking about because I've come off a video call with my VCE class, which is still running. Education is terribly underfunded and misfunded in favour of private schools and sadly undervalued. Anyway, back to work, says Ali in Ocean Grove.
That's really multitasking there in this. Hi, folks. Listening to this conversation intently, but also busy teaching. There's a myriad of problems. Workload, no longer just teaching, student issues, increased violence and abuse, parents, curriculum, resources, the list goes on. But I still love teaching. That's from Chris in Castlemaine. Well, Hayley Duru is a VCE maths teacher at Mount Waverley Secondary College. And Hayley, we've spoken to you in the past. Is it all as bad as it feels like at the moment and that teachers are feeling undervalued, under-resourced and are walking away in large numbers?
Good morning, Rochelle, and hi, Jono. I've been listening to all of this, but I have to say I don't feel like that at all, actually. I'm one of 79,000 teachers across Victoria, so understandably we'd all have, you know, different perspectives, but I absolutely love teaching and I'm certainly not looking to leave the profession. Quite the opposite. I'm quite active in trying to attract and recruit people into what I think is just the most amazing profession.
That's really
challenging.
Yeah, really good to hear, Hayley, because we've heard some negative stories this morning about workload. In particular, people are saying it's just too much work. There's too much, you know, justifying your own existence. And there's a lot involved in teaching that people don't see and understand. How do you cope with the workload?
Yeah, look, I heard all of that and I certainly don't want to downplay any of their experiences. Teaching is absolutely busy and challenging and multifaceted. There's lots of work that we do that people don't necessarily see, you know, that doesn't happen in the classroom. I think through the recent COVID period and remote learning, I'd like to think that a lot of families certainly have a greater appreciation for the work that educators do. I certainly feel very appreciated. I've been teaching my Year 12s and then my Year 9s this morning remotely, obviously. We all just pivoted back to that. But I think it's about, you know, the people that go into teaching need to be the right people for that profession. So people who are really, you know, have a passion for learning, obviously very passionate about their discipline area, so mine's maths, people who are, you know, have excellent communication skills and are really generous with their time. There's sort of attributes that, you know, make teaching such a really rewarding experience if you're the right person for the job, I guess. I did hear a caller speak about Finland, and I have been to Denmark and Sweden and visited schools there, and they have an amazing education system. But I have to say, so do we. And some of the work that's happening in the education department at the moment, not just in government schools, so I work in a government school, but across the Catholic and the independent sectors is quite incredible. I'm not sure whether you've heard of the Victorian Academy of Teaching.
Well, this is what I wanted to ask you about, because earlier, you know, we were talking about whether or not mentorship is there or just general support is there. So this is the Teaching Academy, which we know that James Molino is about to announce, and you've helped work on this. So what is the Teaching Academy, and how will this help students or student teachers?
Oh, this just makes me so excited. So earlier there was a conversation, a caller was talking about having mentorship when you're a graduate teacher. And certainly a lot of work goes into that, and graduate teachers all have mentors, and there's also a pilot program at the moment looking at how they can better support entry-level teachers, you know, in their first few years. But this is separate. So the Victorian Academy of Teaching and Leadership is going to be open for teachers from government and Catholic and independent schools. And it's really looking at attracting the best teachers from across all sectors. to come together and learn from one another. So they'll take part in a course that is a year-long course, and throughout that year they'll still be teaching in their own school, but periodically throughout the year they'll come together at the academy and get to work and network with the state's leading teachers, which will just be so inspiring. I mean, any sort of professional learning you attend is always, you know, beneficial because you learn from other teachers. But this is like the best of the best teachers coming together. They'll have access to masterclasses from experts around, literally around the world, and obviously our best educators in Australia
as
well.
And will that help, do you think? Will that help keep people in the profession?
Oh, absolutely, because I think it's about providing a really genuine pathway for the best teachers to stay in the classroom as well. And, you know, some of our best teachers choose to go off into leadership and management, and sometimes that requires them to come out of the classroom more. But someone like me, I mean, the best part of every day is being in a classroom, and I really think this will have an impact. So it's called the Teaching Excellence Program. And after completing the year, you'll be a master teacher. So you'll be a fellow of the program, and then you'll have the chance to actually become a master teacher and teach other teachers in the program as well. So it provides opportunities for, you know, career trajectory that keeps our best teachers in the classroom. And when you work with other teachers, I mean, everything just gets better when teachers work together to talk about learning and student learning. So I really think it will have a huge impact.
Well, that sounds really exciting. And it's so good to hear some positive news. Yeah. So look, thank you so much for having a chat with us, and best of luck with the new program, Hayley.
Thank you. Have a great day, guys.
Hayley Giroux, a VCE maths teacher at Mount Waverley Secondary College, talking about the positives of teaching. Yeah. And I'm glad that not everyone is feeling burnt out and overworked, Rich.
Oh, well, certainly, because there's a text here that just says burnout, burnout, burnout. I'll be leaving in the next 12 months. It's a shame because I love my job, but I also need to look after my work-life balance and my mental health. Well, it will be interesting to see what happens, not only whether we do see large numbers leave, but if, like Hayley, if we start to see change, there is no doubt. And it's come through really strongly that people love their job, but casualisation, insecurity, and just the workload that's being put onto teachers is what's forcing those out. Not to mention at the moment, they're doing it all remotely.
That's it. And I got a taste for this. I actually did my my graduate diploma in teaching, and studied for a year and then did the placements. And then just thought, oh, I don't know if I'm really cut out for this.
Really?
This is not
really. You'd be a good teacher. More than me. I'd crack it and storm out. Like, I would be terrible.
It was really good in that it showed me how much work is involved in teaching. There is a lot to it. And it's not just, you know, 13 weeks of leave a year and that's it.
If you've missed any part of this program, you can subscribe to the Conversation Hour podcast. That way you can go right back to the beginning, or you can share it with someone. I dare say you just have to scratch the surface of any of your friends and family, and you will have a teacher close by to you. So you might want to share it with them as well. And you can always email us, Jono. Now, we have turned lots of our emails into entire programs. So whether it be if you want to mention a particular topic, you want to throw an idea around at us, or even talk about a particular person, email us, because it could become a show.
Yes, conversationhour@abc.net.au. Sometimes people will email us about one idea and we'll pick some other little kernel of an idea and turn it into a program. So conversationhour@abc.net.au. Thanks for listening, and have a good one.